Hello, this is Eric Morse Eskenazi. I am the host of the Erratic Dispatches podcast. Thanks for tuning in to this latest episode featuring an interview with Brendan Kumarasamy, who's a communication expert and founder of MasterTalk. Hello, thanks for listening to the Erratic Dispatches podcast. We'll be back shortly after a brief break.
So you're based up in Canada?
You got it, based in Montreal.
Montreal, okay. And do you mind sharing like some of your background information, like your education and how you got started in public speaking?
Yeah, of course, I'm happy to do that. So hey everyone, my name's Brendan. I'm the founder of MasterTalk. I make YouTube videos on public speaking. And the way that I got started was when I was in business school at Concordia in Montreal, in university. I used to do these things called case competitions. So think of it like professional sports, but for nerds. So other guys were, you know, playing college football or playing rugby or something. I would still eat the same junk food as they would, but instead of watching other schools play sports or sports games, I would watch other schools present. And that was my life for 3 years. Presented over 500 times, coached dozens of people on public speaking. And then after I entered the corporate world, I just asked myself what I could do to make a difference in the world. And the idea for the YouTube channel came to be because I realized a lot of the information sucked on communications. So I wanted to do something about it.
Mm-hmm. And prior to university, were you interested in doing public speaking in high school? Like, were you involved in like speech and debate type stuff, or did you like any acting?
Completely the opposite, actually. Just to give people context, so Montreal is an odd city in the sense that most people speak multiple languages. So you need to know French to do well in the city because it's a required mm-hmm. language. But mm-hmm. I didn't know how to speak French, so my entire education system wasn't French. Mm-hmm. And that was the issue. Not only was I uncomfortable with presentations, I had to present in languages I didn't even know. Mm. So naturally, public speaking was not something I was interested in at all, Eric. It's actually surprising when you think of how life turned out. But yeah, the passion started coming more in university.
Hmm. And I watched a number of your videos, your MasterTalk videos on YouTube. I really, really liked them. And I liked the different topics you had. You talk about the art of listening. And you talk about how like making boring topics seem more engaging. And you talked about like your love for dance and karaoke and theater improv, like how that inspires you to be a better speaker, public speaker. Would you like to like elaborate more about that?
Yeah, for sure. There's like 10 questions in one, but I'm happy to.
Okay, just take your time.
Yeah, for sure. So listening, absolutely. As Epictetus once said, you know, you have 2 ears and 1 mouth for a reason. So that you listen twice as much as you speak. The reason why listening is very important in the context of public speaking is it allows you to tailor your message to your audience. And I'll give you the best example in my industry. A lot of speech coaches tend to start their presentations like this. Did you know that after death, public speaking is a fear that human beings have that is rampaging the world? Obviously, I'm cartooning mm-hmm. a bit here, mm-hmm. but you get the idea. Mm-hmm. They talk about the statistic. It's not that it's not true. It's true. But if we step back and listen to our audience and say, what is the outcome that we're trying to achieve? We're trying to help them. We're trying to inspire them. We're trying to help them take action, give a presentation. The last thing you want to do, Eric, is talk about death in the first place. Why would you ever mention that in mm-hmm. a keynote? That's an example of the benefits of listening and understanding who your audience is and playing around that. Next thing you talked about was my passion for karaoke, dance, and all that stuff. The way that I see it, and for people who don't know that, I speak three languages, like karaoke in 8, and I dance alone in my basement an hour a day. It's my favorite hobbies of mine. But the reason why it applies in presentations, especially in public speaking, is by taking more risks with your content, you're actually going to create something new. I find a lot of people in my industry are very stale. Like they take their mm-hmm. academic books, they go, this is public speaking, but they don't actually make it relatable to people. They don't make it fun. They don't make it entertaining. So that's my attempt at doing that. And I learned a couple of lessons along the way too. So for example, the best way to pronunciate words and articulate better has nothing to do with pronouncing words every day. That's boring. Nobody does the exercise. Karaoke is much more effective. Start practicing songs that you don't understand, that you know the language, that you don't know. And then when you go back to pronouncing words you do understand, it's much easier for you to pronounce those words. So you mentioned listening, you mentioned passion for, what was the third one?
Yeah, I mentioned like how dance, karaoke, and theater improv have inspired you to be better at public speaking, talk about the art of listening, and also about making boring topics more engaging.
Right, boring to interesting, gotcha. So the idea with topics and boring topics is that boring topics don't exist, only boring speakers, right? Mm-hmm. Only boring speakers exist. I'll give you the best example. I majored in all things accounting. So obviously it's not the most exciting thing to take a thick book that's heavier than you, like that's heavier than anyone on this call, not you in particular, I meant me too, right? Like a huge thick and book and then summarize that for people. So the idea is if you don't look interested, then the presentation will be seen as boring. But as you probably guess, in the context of communication, communication content is dry. But if you communicate it in a way that is interesting, if I look interested to give it, my vocal tones are changing, and the way that I'm expressing myself also change. That's how we turn the boring and make it more interesting.
Have you ever done any TED Talks?
The goal is to do one in the next 10 years, but I'm going to save it, actually.
Okay. Oh,
wow. Yeah.
Okay. So because of the shutdown, like how are you doing that? How are you coping up in Montreal? I guess right now you're just basically just doing a lot of online work or online consulting work and doing podcasts and videos right now.
You got it. I probably lost like 70% of my keynotes in like a day or something, but I was able to replace a lot of those virtually. So it wasn't the end of the world, but yeah, it's just about pivoting. Like one thing I can add here to the conversation is not many people understand who the real enemy is. Like, let's say you ask someone around you, who's your enemy? They might say something like, oh, you know, my girlfriend, my boyfriend. I was like, wait, what? Your partner, your family, or the people who cuts you off in traffic, or the person who gets the last thing. But people don't realize that we all have the same enemy. And it's an enemy we can't beat. We can throw money at it. We can try and beat it. And it's time. Time is the one thing that is you can't win against. Time is the one thing that you should always be frustrated with, because time always wins in the end. A lot of people tend to think that 2020, you can just go to a bank and get a loan back as if it's canceled or something. Not the case. So my advice to people is use it effectively. Reinvest the time and don't waste it.
What were your key mentors or inspirations when you first started getting to public speaking?
Right. So my personal hero of mine, and I always recommend his memoir on shows, is a book called Thirst by Scott Harrison. So Scott is the CEO of Charity Water. I really like the way that he thinks about business. He thinks about philanthropy. But I also find him intriguing in the way that he used to be a nightclub promoter. And then he used all of that marketing insight, that marketing knowledge and genius into philanthropy. So he was able to build one of the biggest nonprofits in the world on the water, on solving the water crisis. And I think his book is an excellent read for anyone who wants to be a great speaker.
And anybody else?
Yeah, of course. Oh, yeah. We can make like a whole podcast, but I'll give you two other ones. Seth Godin. I really like the way that Seth talks about multiple subjects and at a very high level. That's not many speakers can do that, because he can comment on anything very well. And then the third one would probably be, I would probably say, I don't want to pick any fights with anyone that I know in this list. Marissa Peer is really good. I like, she's a hypnotherapist for people who don't know that.
Okay.
And her clients included like Princess Diana and stuff. So I saw her speak a couple of months ago for COVID hit. Wow. She's really mesmerizing. Like just the way that she speaks, you're just like, wow, like I got to change my life. She's great. I'd highly recommend her as well.
And what, like the type of industries that you do your speeches for, you do consulting for, is it like all industries? Is it just corporate, nonprofit, tech companies, you know, creative entertainment?
You're right. It's the whole gamut. But if I would say one specialization, just because I used to invest in startups and still am, it's technology. I mostly work with technology people. But I've definitely spoken across the board for sure.
Any of you like done any consulting to like companies run by like much older people that are kind of stiff in their thinking, and is there times that you had to persuade them or you felt challenged and trying to make them open up and be, you know, to utilize better public speaking?
Yeah, people have different perspectives on this. And I definitely respect other coaches in my industry who take on that type of work. I'm fortunate that I don't have to, so I just choose not to. But I do work with a lot of people who are much older than me. That's something I want to emphasize. So like I have clients in their 60s, 50s, levels, but they're a lot more open-minded to my feedback, and they watch my videos and they take notes. So I enjoy working with those types of people as well.
And do you get like a lot of people who contact you who've just seen your videos on YouTube, or do you ever do like some cold calling? You just sort of seek out different companies or individuals. You feel like that person definitely used my services.
That's a great question. So it's definitely a mix of the both, and it depends on the strategy. So I see myself more as an artist rather than an entrepreneur, in the sense of I'm someone who wants to make the best public speaking content available free in the world. And that just ends up generating me sales through pretty much no effort of my own. The opposite approach is much more effective if your goal is to make sales quotas like cold email. And I did do that as well, and I still do. But I'm a lot more targeted. So I'll give an example. Like one of the people I wanted to work with so badly because I just like his mission and what he was doing that I was willing to do it for free just because he's like the CEO of a nonprofit, right? So I cold emailed him. And one thing that's an advice for people is don't tell people what you do. And that advice is especially applicable to me. Show them what you do. Mm-hmm. So when I email people, I don't email and say, I'm a speech coach. Here's my video. No, that's a waste of time. What you want to do, especially with people who are CEOs, you send an email and you say, I watched this keynote. Here are the 76 mistakes you make. Do what you want with it. And then 30 minutes later, they email me and go, how much do you charge?
Really?
It's a lot more effective. Because you just point all the mistakes. And obviously you have to be good at it, what you do. Right? Because even if I'm young, I've presented probably over 900 times now, probably as of today. So like I have a lot of experience. So like when I see a C-level executive, other C-levels are looking at that person, would go, oh, you're not making any mistakes. But I would say, no, but what you did at 41 seconds didn't make any sense what you did there. And I just like nitpick everything. So I'm pretty crazy in that way, I guess.
Okay. And you work work with international clients too?
Mostly the U.S., but Canada, U.S., yeah. Uh-huh. But I do podcasts internationally, though.
Okay. Do you do podcasts in different languages?
French, yeah.
French? Okay. So have you consulted with French companies?
You got it. But mostly English clients, though, for
sure. Mostly English clients.
Hello. Thanks for listening to the Erratic Dispatches podcast. We'll be back shortly after a brief break.
Have you written a book yet, or are you currently working on a book about, you know, your experiences and, you know?
Yeah, book is definitely in the works, but I'll probably wait 5-10 years before releasing it, probably.
Okay. And you share some of us about like devouring information. I really like that. You talked about that, the importance of that, how you said you read. And I know like, a lot of entrepreneurs, they say like, at least try to read it. You know, a book a day or several books a week, it helps them.
Yeah, the way that I see this is the reason why you want to learn is because you have a limited time on Earth, right? So your goal is to get as fast and as smart as you possibly can really rapidly so that you can avoid common pitfalls before the pitfall happens. So I'll give you an example. I listen to a lot of divorce lawyers on podcasts, but I've never been married and I've never been in a relationship. So why do I do that? It's so that I understand the pitfalls so I can avoid them before they actually happen. So one cool way to learn that I like, so I'm happy to share that, is make a list of all the big mistakes that other people have made that you haven't yet or that you think you can make and find ways to mitigate them right away. So one example is there's a 50% statistical likelihood that I'll get divorced at some point in my life, so I'll probably figure that out. There's probably, I couldn't predict COVID, but like, you know, a recession that reduced my revenue by 80, by 50%. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect 90% though, but hey, you live with what you got. And then all those different scenarios. And then based on those cases, you want to figure out podcasts and ways to learn and think through. So you know exactly what you're focused on.
Mm-hmm. Do you do like a podcast? How often do you record your own podcast? Is there several times a week?
Yeah, so I don't have a podcast. I mostly guest on other people's, but I do my own YouTube channel for sure. But my strategy with that, my workflow, is I write my content 5 years in advance and I record it a year in advance. So like this year, well, I'm in the process of writing my content now for the next 5 because I can't go outside now, right? So now I'm at like, as of this recording, I think I'm like 19 months ahead of schedule, something like that. So next month I'm filming 2021 and then in January I'll probably film 2022.
Wow. I like how you mentioned the importance of humor using that in public speaking. You want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So the idea with humor that I want to push for everyone is it's a tool, right? So if you're not someone who's funny or someone who doesn't want to be funny, don't worry about it. But for those who are interested, the key to humor is simple. There's obviously a lot more tips in the video, but I think the main idea is the best jokes, the easiest ones to tell, are often the ones that you do over and over again. So if you look at the 350 times I've presented my keynote, so I presented 900 times, but 300, a third of those times with the same presentation, I focused, I think from the 25th time I did it up until today, I've used the same joke over and over again. So I call it the Julia joke. So I'm happy to give context that really quickly. So I give a workshop one. This was like 2-3 years ago when I was getting started, to a group of teenage girls. So naturally, they didn't want to listen to an old guy like me coming in on a Sunday morning. So anyways, I asked them, like, at some point in the presentation, what do you think of this part? And it's supposed to be bad, so I can compare it to something that's good. And nobody participated. The whole room was silent. And there's this girl named Julia in the back of the room, raises her hand and goes, that was a 5. And then I just go, oh, crap. Like, you know, it's a great professional speech coach getting slapped in the mouth in the morning. So I asked Julie, I said, what's wrong with it? She said, well, it's too fast. And nobody else started going, started heckling at me. And then everyone started laughing. It was hilarious. And it was so funny that I just used it in all my other keynotes.
Do you want to share, like, what are the biggest joys and challenges of doing public speaking and keynote speaking?
Yeah, for sure. So challenges for sure is it gets tiring really quickly. And by tiring, I don't mean boring. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, if you're meant to be a speaker after you've done 10 speeches of the same presentation. And this is something most people come up to me with. They go, Brendan, you want to change it up. Brendan, I want to change things up. But the truth, the reality is that the best speakers in the world, think Tony Robbins, do the same thing over and over again. Same seminar, 35 years, hasn't changed the seminar. It's the same seminar. And if you want to be great, you need to be willing to do that. But it is a challenge for most people because most people get bored with their own material. So I think that's a challenge that most people would have. I would say for me, the biggest joy is definitely just meeting new people and doing things I never thought was possible. Like, I've met some crazy people over the years just because I have this YouTube channel, I do these things. Mm-hmm. So I think the message for people is if you do weird things will happen in a good way. Mm-hmm. So those are some things that come to mind.
And most of the feedback you get on your videos on YouTube is positive?
Yeah, for sure. And like everyone, you know, you're going to get hate at some point. Mm-hmm. Most of my hate probably comes from tenured university professors who think I'm too young to coach this, even if I know more about public speaking than they do. But anyway, side note, I think the idea is just, you know, you're always going to get hate. And for someone like me who doesn't swear in my videos, who's literally just a dude in a suit sitting in a chair, like giving tips on communication, nothing controversial. Like, there's nothing controversial in my videos. Even I still get hate, right? And that's life. You just kind of deal with it.
Do you have like any friends or colleagues in Canada that do similar work as you, like do the public speaking and different industries?
Not speaking coaches, but speakers, absolutely.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you ever have to deal with, like, do you ever do, like, videos when you're doing public speaking? Or do you ever do, like, PowerPoint presentations? Like, a visual stuff going on at the same time? Or usually when you do you just speak in front of a podium with a mic?
Oh, I gotcha. So what I would do in presentations, so I would never stand behind a podium, never do that. Mm-hmm, and the reason you don't want to do that is because it creates a barrier between yourself and the audience. It's harder to connect with people. So what I recommend to do instead is, you know, get as close as possible to your audience, whatever is possible, depending on the room. And avoid things that could ruin you as a speaker. So that's why I never use video. Not because video is bad, but because there's a very high chance that videos don't work in your slides. And then you're just sitting there panicking and just saying, I don't know how to make this video work. You want to reduce your liability as much as possible. So like in my case, I practice my voice projection a lot in case the mic doesn't work. Right? So I can be very loud if I need to. Or, you know, I practice my slides over and over again to make sure everything's perfect, or I make sure that there's no video. So try and reduce, or special effects, try and reduce your liability whenever you can.
I know we mentioned about I'm going to put a book out at some point in the future, or any other upcoming projects you're working on, or do you think at some point you probably would want to do, you know, teaching as well, like at a university?
Definitely not teaching at a university. And the reason is because it's not scalable. Because my goal is to teach the world, but obviously I have my own programs and stuff. But I think the idea with people that I'd love to kind of conclude this whole interview with is I believe everyone has an idea, right? Everyone has something worth sharing, whether it's a cupcake recipe, whether it's your journey running Spartan races, or even if it's just an idea you want to share on a stage. So I'd recommend that if you want to do that, you know, just check out my YouTube videos, Master Talk, learn from it, grow. And then if you want to message me on Instagram, Master Your Talk as well. If you have any questions, that'd be great as well. But no other projects really.
Okay. Do you want to share any unusual stories in your journey as a speaker?
Oh, geez, lots of them. Well, I mean, just me as a whole is unusual. Don't you all find it odd that I became a CEO professional speaking coach at 23 years old. Like, no. It's kind of crazy. No, I guess you find it normal, but most people don't, right? Yeah. So it's kind of, I think that's very unusual, but in a good way. So it's been fun to kind of see the level of access I've gotten over the years, just to people that you never thought you'd meet until you were like in your 40s or something. So I think that's unusual in and of itself. And other stuff includes, like, there's a workshop I gave once to like 400 people. And I was told 15 minutes before the 15 minutes before going on the stage that I had to do half of it in French. And I prepared 4 months for it. So I kind of just said, and then you have to adapt really quickly. So that's another unusual thing that comes to mind.
You ever nervous though when you're doing the speaking?
Oh yeah. All great speakers are scared. I think anyone who tells you otherwise is lying. But I think the difference is that the mission, the intention, the reason why we're speaking severely outweighs the fear. So in that example that I gave you when I was in that room 15 minutes to go to give this keynote, any regular speaker will start to complain. They'll go, oh, you know, this sucks. Why didn't they tell me that a week before? I would have had time to prepare. So if you mess up and you stink, you don't blame it on yourself. You blame it on the system. Whereas the best speakers in the world, they always blame themselves for their own misdemeanors. And the reason is because I'm not here to speak about me. I'm here to add value to the audience. And I only have one shot with them because I'll never see them again, chances are, because I'm going to speak to the next audience. So in that one moment, I need to make sure that I knock it out of the park. Even if I have to give it in Spanish, I don't care. I have to figure it out. And that is the difference between a great speaker and an exceptional one. It's not that we're not scared, because we're just, trust me, I was scared, especially that one. That was my biggest keynote ever. I didn't do it languages. The difference is mindset, right? I care more about adding value about the audience than my own fear, so the fear disappears.
And do you, when you do your coaching, do you ever recommend like a certain like time frame, like speeches should be a certain length? Like a half an hour, 15 minutes, you know, so the audience would get bored?
Not really. Like, I've given 3-hour workshops where everyone was engaged. I think the difference, and I'm sure everyone on this call can do that too, I think it's more about have one keynote on your subject matter expertise and have different versions of that keynote. So for example, if it's a 2-hour presentation, make sure there's a lot more interaction. If it's a 15-minute presentation, give up your best stories. Like, make it punchy, make it amazing, make it life-changing. So at the end of the time, they follow up with you or something. Because you can't teach them everything in 15. So you want to kind of make sure that your key ideas are communicated.
Besides the link I have for your YouTube channel, are there other links you would want me to share once I upload this podcast for the listeners to check out?
Yeah, absolutely. Just probably the Instagram page. So feel free to just message me on Master Your Talk. Okay. Or Master Talk, the YouTube channel. But other than that, that's it.
Yeah. How long ago did you start up your company?
So I've been coaching people since I was 19. So I was probably like 5 years now. But I started Master Talk specifically, the YouTube channel, the coaching stuff, 18 months ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Are you like getting like startup capital for it, or are you just self-funding it?
No. So self-funded, because I wanted to own all of it.
Mm-hmm. At some point in the future, would you bring on other people, or would you ever mentor other people?
Can you elaborate on that? You mean like add new speaking coaches?
Well, as like, I guess your company is like a sole proprietorship. So at some point in the future, do you imagine it like expanding it, like bringing other people involved in your company, like other speakers? Or are you just kind of only focusing on just doing this you one-on-one?
Right. So I definitely partner with a couple of different people who run their own businesses. But I think for me, the focus is not really like making this like an 8-figure business or something. It's not really my focus. I think more for me, it's more about being the biggest media company in public speaking. So that when people are scared of public speaking, can't afford someone like me, they can come back to this podcast, come back to the YouTube channel and say, well, all of this is available for free. And that's basically the long-term goal. So so I do have a team right now. Like, my videographer is my best friend, and the guy who does my thumbnails is a very famous artist in Canada. So I have like my own little team, and then probably I'll expand later on as it grows.
That's great. Well, I wish you the best of luck with that.
Appreciate it, Eric.
Brendan, any other stories you'd like to share with the listeners of this podcast?
Or any advice? Yeah, I think I'll leave with my favorite quote, Eric, which is be insane or be the same. Like, if you're still listening to this podcast, you probably do want to make a difference. You probably want to do something different with your life. And my advice is, the only way you're going to get there is by doing exactly what everyone doesn't want you to do. Mm-hmm. Don't you find it odd that I started, not you, but everyone else is listening. Don't you find it all odd that I started a YouTube channel, public speaking at 22, started coaching CEOs at 23? I know you don't. Everyone else.
I know.
Right? But I'm literally having this conversation on a mattress with you. I still live in my mother's basement. I don't own a car, despite the income that I make. So how does any of this make any sense?
And that doesn't. I'm all for the entrepreneur, you know, spirit, especially where I live in New York City, you know, going to a lot of entrepreneur events. It's great. It's very inspiring.
Right. But that's the point. You don't count in this area because you're just as bizarre as me. But I meant the people who are listening.
Yeah.
Right. You know, who have a day job, and I still have my day job, but I mean, like, you know, who are thinking of going outside the box. That's what forces you outside the box. Mm-hmm, when you start to question all of everything, why do you need to get married? Why do you need to have 2.5 kids? Why not just 2? And all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Then you start to create your own thesis and your own unique perspective on how the world should be. And that's when life gets interesting.
Hello, thanks for listening to the Erratic Dispatches podcast. We'll be back shortly after a brief break. Thanks for tuning in to this latest episode of the Erratic Dispatches podcast, featuring an interview with Brendan Kumarasamy, communication expert and founder of MasterTalk. I've included links on the official podcast profile page, in which you can check out Brendan's MasterTalk website and also watch his videos on his YouTube channel and also check out his Instagram. And there's also a contribution button located on my Anchor FM page, in which any kind of donation would be greatly appreciated, since I'm always striving to make my podcast better. I'll be back soon with a new episode. Take care. Bye-bye.